Good morning again. It's John Williams here weekdays from 9 to noon on social media, WGN King John. I was wondering what the ratings were for the Super Bowl. I don't have the overnights. We don't know how well it did, but I know that Super Bowl ratings have been declining in the last several years. 98 million people watched the Super Bowl last year. Don't know what it was this year. They expected it, that they could go up a little bit if it was a close game, but Kansas City isn't a big market, and San Francisco's a West Coast team. Better if it's New England, New York, Chicago, the major markets, and more East Coast for national broadcasts. Dave, 41 of the 50 most watched television broadcasts last year were of what?
41 of last year?
Of 2019. 41 of 50
NFL
games.
Yeah. But here's one thing to keep in mind.
41 of 50. Wow.
When these numbers get tossed around, as far as the Super Bowl goes, there are more ways now to see the Super Bowl than just turning on Fox and watching it.
This is sort of the debate that happened after the president's inauguration. Well, how many people watched it on the lawn? How many people watched it on TV? How many people watched it online? How many people watched it afterwards on a podcast? Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, there are more ways than one to consume it, aren't there?
Compared to the way we used when the Bears played the Patriots in 1986.
Still, the best way to do it is you sit there in front of your big old screen.
That's
with
the best way to
some
do
wings, and you just do that.
You don't have to have wings.
What's the best food you had last night? Go. Yesterday.
I had, it was Lou Malnati's pizza.
I did have this weekend some wings dipped in ranch. I do that about once a year. Dang, that was good. Mary, what's the best food you had to eat yesterday? Go.
Taco dip. I love taco dip.
Into the newsroom. Steve Grzanich, best food you ate yesterday.
I know you're all going to be surprised by this, but I was dieting and did not have anything outside of my diet yesterday.
That is a
salad.
You know what? You are cured, sir. Yeah. If you dodged yesterday, you are better than the rest.
I did.
Oh, good for you, Steve.
Thanks.
I will not torture you about the delicious pizza I had, too, with pepperoni.
Or the wings. You could tell me more about those if you want.
Does it help if I just talk about the wings? Does that help or does that hurt?
Oh, no, it helps.
I'm not so sure. Do you know one of the debates today about the Super Bowl is the objectification of Shakira and Jennifer Lopez? I thought they looked beautiful. I thought it was really fun, energetic, visually compelling halftime show, and dang, at 43 and 50, I thought, wow, the combined age of these ladies is 93, and it works. But some people were all over Twitter yesterday going, I'm watching this with my kids. This is ridiculous. It's 2020, for crying out loud.
Yeah, did it empower women or demoralize women?
That's exactly
the question.
312-981-7200. Not to get too deep here, but just text or call and tell me, because I didn't think about that, but I was watching it with my adult son. So my head wasn't there. If I had women or children in the room, maybe my radar would have been tuned differently. 312-981-7200.
The names of all 50 states and their capitals.
Trenton's in New Jersey, north of Jefferson, Missouri. You got Richmond in Virginia, South Dakota has Pierre. Harrisburg's in Pennsylvania, and Augusta's up in Maine. And here is Providence, Rhode Island, next to Dover, Delaware. Concord, New Hampshire, just a quick jaunt to Montpelier, which is up in Vermont. Hartford's in Connecticut, so pretty in the fall. And Kansas has Topeka, Minnesota has St. Paul.
Seriously, I thought when the president sent out that tweet, I know exactly what happened. He was very excited, like we all were, and it's very presidential to immediately congratulate the winning team. And so he just said, Kansas City Chiefs, Kansas City, Kansas, send. Not thinking, And I was thinking after I saw that, the tweet where he accidentally put the winning team in Kansas instead of Missouri, I thought, I'm quite capable of that. But I'm also sort of insecure enough about my knowledge of things that I would have then called Dave Ennett, or I'm telling you, there's an app out there that needs to be developed, and you just set it up with your wife or your associate at work, somebody who you trust to be your filter. And when you hit send on social media, it'll go to Facebook or Instagram or wherever you want it to go. But first, it goes to that person. And then they just hit OK, and then it goes to wherever you sent it. How good is that? Because then the things where you accidentally said my State of the Union address is February 3rd, they go, oh, no, it's February 4th, they would have caught that. congratulations to Kansas. I mean, Missouri, they would have caught that. How many of us would that embarrassment have saved?
It's like sending your expense report on to be approved. And they approve it or they send it back to you, right?
Right, exactly. We kind of have that already. We're not going to give you the money until we make sure it's okay. We're not going to let you congratulate Kansas until we tell you it's Missouri. I'm not very good at those things either. John, halftime Super Bowl. It was in Miami. It had a Latin flair. A few people have pointed that out. I'm not looking for controversy here. But boy, the USA Today did a big article today about that. And they said, here are some of the tweets. This is, I think, in a way, bad reporting. I'm interested in conversation. I don't consider myself a journalist in this. But how do you gauge the national sentiment on something like the appropriateness of the halftime show? Well, let's go to Twitter. But you can find Twitter to say that they're dancing on Mars, right? I mean, Twitter is everybody, and you can find anything you want there. But among the tweets were these. The at Super Bowl halftime show was just a bad strip show. We have had so much positive discussion about not treating women like sex objects, and then they go and do this. You can't cry that women need to be treated better than support this display of sexual objectifying. Somebody else tweeted, I'm no prude, but I'm watching this with my 7-year-old daughter and my 11-year-old son. It was really uncomfortable. Another user wrote, I am embarrassed for my kids to watch this halftime show. What the hell? Stripper poles? Crotch and rear end shots? No dignity. Shame on you, J-Lo and Shakira. Others said, hey, it's okay for grown women to be sexual and fabulous. And another person tweeted, pole dancing is really hard and takes immense amounts of strength. It's empowering. And honestly, something I admire J-Lo tonight. When we saw her go horizontal on that thing, I'm like, wait, she's 50 and she's really doing that. And Griffin, I was watching with my son, he goes, well, that's kind of an homage to her movie that she was in. I'm like, yeah, but I didn't know that she was really doing all that stuff in the movie. She was really doing that stuff in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, she's pretty strong.
Did you see the movie?
Yeah. I didn't think it was all that great. Did you?
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I thought it was.
Listen to Dave. I enjoyed it.
Never mind. Lady Gaga.
What do you mean, Mayor?
Lady Gaga said the show was incredible. Kim Kardashian shot about praise. A lot of celebrities said, nice job, ladies. But others, watching it with families, said they were uncomfortable with the Super Bowl last night.
My little granddaughter was watching it. It was like her first exposure to it. And my son was saying, this is a great role model for her. I'm like, oh, boy.
I got a text last night from a friend, and I didn't know what he was talking about. I guess this was it. He goes, I guess the networks are over the costume malfunction, right?
The wardrobe malfunction.
The wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
If they're showing that. I think the people that were voting on whether or not we would see some derriere cleavage of J-Lo have won that bet.
There's a lot of tape involved, I believe.
847 said, actually, John, I think Kansas City is in both states. The stadium might be in Missouri, but there is a Kansas City, Kansas. Let's go to Dave Ennett.
No, I mentioned that to you off the air. There is a Kansas City, Kansas. The Chiefs are based in Kansas City, Missouri.
Details.
Just for
when you hit send, it goes to your wife. It goes to your associate.
I think that's a great idea.
How is that not just a regular, every CEO, every politician, every television personality should have that function. And it doesn't have to delay it long. I'll stop talking about that.
Our kids should have that too, John.
That's right. You give a cell phone, a smartphone to your kids. You say, okay, you can have one, but everything you post comes to mom or dad first.
For approval.
And if you don't, then I know, get a job, buy a $600 phone, and you do it yourself. You could do it that way. I was also impressed with some of the announcing. People were all set yesterday to dislike Joe Buck. I'm not smart enough to know why he's a bad announcer. It was him, or was it Troy Aikman was the color guy?
Troy, yeah.
One of them said in the second half, Kansas City needs some Mahomes magic right now. And on the next snap, he throws that 40-plus yard big, which changed the game. And I thought, that's pretty good when they know that it needs to happen and it happens. I just thought sometimes the flow of information was fun. At one point, one of the announcers said that a player on the field had turned down a surfing sponsorship at the age of 14. I didn't know that. I really like the SodaStream ad where they find water on Mars. And they're like, water on Mars, the astronauts. So they put it in the spaceship and they're heading back to Earth. And one of the astronauts mistakenly drinks it, thinking it's just water for them. I laughed at that. But there was a series of commercials where I didn't know what they were doing. Did that happen to you guys where you're watching a commercial and you go, now, what is this for? There's a whole bunch of products or references and they're thoroughly entertaining. And the star power on some of these things was terrific.
Like the hummus one. They kept showing all the different kinds of, or talking about the different kinds of hummus. And I'm going, what?
And sometimes there's more than one product appearing in there. Yes. And so I'm like, okay, so what am I supposed to run out and buy? I think that's why the Jeep ad with Bill Murray in a sort of, you know, reprise of Groundhog's Day was so successful, because you got the reference. It was just an homage to that movie. And it's selling Jeep. There's only two things you need to know. Here's the shtick. There's the product. I could understand that. I didn't need to hit send to Dave Ennett to explain that ad to me. It made perfect sense when I saw that one.
The groundhog was so funny. Sticking his head out the window.
He's playing whack-a-mole towards the end of the commercial. And
groundhog.
He says, it's just a game. It's not personal. Don't worry about that. Bam, bam, bam. The funniest tweet I saw, though, was from during the game. The interview shows Mark Baser, who tweeted that the worst halftime show would be James Taylor singing. And it was after Shakira and J-Lo do their thing. And I thought, imagine comparing that show you saw yesterday to James Taylor.
Suzanne, the plans we made put an end to you.
That's your halftime show. And you just go, oh, that's great. Love me some James Taylor.
At least we could go to the bathroom.
Sorry, JT, that is not a halftime show. Well done, Mark Baser.
Hi. I lived in the little village. This was a long time ago. I'm 86 years old now. But my dog had broken her leg. And, of course, at that time, I was 12 years old, they put dogs down. Yeah. And I cried and cried. My mom says, all right, you can try the vet. But we had no nearby vets. We had to go all the way to Cicero. So I held the dog. And at the time, we had red street cars, you know, with the conductor at the front and the cashier at the back. So he allowed me to stand at the back. I rode on the streetcar. People looked at me. I went to the vet, and he said, well, we'll try. So he fashioned a splint, and I cried, and I cried, and I said, I had 50 cents in my hand. I said, I'll pay you every week. He looked at me, and he said, no charge. No charge. And I went home, and I had the dog for 8 more years.
How about that?
Never forgot it. Never forgot that vet either.
What a lovely story. Thanks for sharing that, Elizabeth.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Elizabeth called in on our show on Friday. We were talking about the extraordinary lengths that people go to take care of their pets. And some of you spent $4,000 on an ACL tear for your cat or dog or bunny rabbit. And she reminded us of what it was like for her to take care of her dog. And she was just so clear. And her memory still seems so vivid to her. I thought about it all day long. Thought I'd share a little more of that with you this morning. It's 9:41. This is John Williams. And the texts just keep on coming. By the way, Dave, somebody said that there is an app, and I don't know what it's called. You didn't tell me what it is, but there's an app that I've described. When you hit send, it goes to your Confederate, and then that person makes sure that it's okay to go out. That would keep the president from tweeting out misinformation or just getting stuff wrong. It would keep all of us from doing that. I don't know what that app is.
It wouldn't work in your personal life.
Why not?
They have to know everything about you. Like if you wanted to send a thing to your mother-in-law and you were saying it wrong.
Right.
And you were like, is this going to offend her or is this not going to offend her? That person would not be able to distinguish that.
Maybe so. But I mean, even in something that's kind of vague like that, Mary, don't you think sometimes a little discussion between you and that person, they go, no, she'll get the joke. No, I think she'll be offended. Well, okay. It some right. Sometimes it's
they have to know your history.
Sometimes it's Kansas or Missouri, and it's easy to know what the right answer
that's
is.
Easy. Yeah.
But other times, at least it would they'd bounce you back and go, "Hey, saw what you're sending, Mom, but maybe you ought to change a couple of words there." And then you talk about it, and then ultimately, I guess you would. I don't know, be able to override their interference. It's your Twitter account, say.
Yeah.
But I just like the idea of running some of those things through some people. Have you ever sent something to somebody and you think, oh, I hope they get that I was being funny, not mean or sarcastic? So then you drop some emoticons or emojis in there to flavor it, and you hope that that gets out that way?
I was actually sending someone a text on Saturday, meant in fun, and I typed it out, and I looked at it. I said, they could misinterpret this. I'm not going to hit send, and I didn't. I deleted it.
And that was a text. Then you do it on social media. If you do it on Instagram or Twitter, and
it's out
the whole you can't get that back.
Nope.
Do you remember our guest, Ryan Hamilton? He's a comedian who has a Netflix special. He was with us in October or something.
At the hospital?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in his special, he actually references how with a smiley face, some people just put in the actual, not the emoji, but they put in a smiley face and they go, he said, you think, I hope that covers it.
Yeah, exactly.
And a period is so offensive.
Yeah, it can, oh really? So he thinks a period at the end of things
can be
seen more stern.
I know everyone can relate to that.
Really?
Yeah.
I do exclamations too much. I don't know.
As a man who's paid his rent for many years, using only the words that come out of my brain and my mouth, when people now substitute emoji and emoticon for thoughts and words, I take not offense, but I think, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to express my feelings to you. So passive-aggressively, I sometimes type out the word smile emoticon. I literally type out S-M-I-L-E space E-M-O-T-I-C-O-N, hoping that they'll think that's funny. But I think what they think is I'm using voice to text and said, smile emoticon. And it spelled it out rather than delivering it. I don't know why I do that. Back to the Super Bowl halftime show. John, I've got three young boys, and the halftime show is very hard for me to watch with them. My five-year-old said, why is she naked? She should not show people her private parts.
And or point to them, which is what she did quite often. Hello?
Listen, some of you were objecting to the angles that the cameras took. It was very much the way Channel 9 used to do hat shots of Cubs games, where they would just show the women with the large breasts. And I think we're past that point on TV baseball coverage these days. Not entirely, but boy, Channel 9 used to be exceptional at that. And I'm getting it both ways this morning. Some of you think that was really strong, powerful women dancing, and it was great. And others of you say, wow, was that inappropriate for a family show? Some of you can't resist when talking about the lots and lots of texts. I appreciate that. And clearly, many of you did not like the Super Bowl halftime show with Shakira and J-Lo. But many of you are also older. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But actually, I'm hearing from young moms.
No, my young son and his wife did not like it at all.
Exactly. Well, exactly.
You referred to my text to you earlier, calling me a friend. Thank you, John.
Well, I didn't know if you wanted to be outed for saying what you said, but it was safe.
My point was just that they've clearly gone past their Janet Jackson concerns.
I know.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
You thought so too, huh? I was watching it, and that was so what I expected from Shakira and J-Lo. If they had been more conservative, dressed, I would have thought that was conspicuous. What did you think you were going to get?
First of all, I think halftime shows are dumb. All of them, pretty much.
Wowzers.
So I'm not a big fan of them. I was reading a book and just looking up once in a while.
Seriously?
Yeah.
How is that possible? Keep going.
Well, it was harder when they kept pointing at things.
A couple of folks have pointed that out, too. We see it. You don't need to put a sign up there for it.
We know what it is.
So we've gone from the accidental reveal and, you know, career-ending moments.
Yeah, think about that.
Dancing on a stripper pole.
Well, a career-ending moment, maybe for Janet. That did change the trajectory of her career.
It did. Sure, it did. How long ago was that? Was it
a thousand, I think, a thousand years ago, I believe it was. It was a long time ago. Yeah, but a lot of you are also pointing out, A, that this is post-Me Too, and it just has a tinny, it's a tin ear if you think that that's what American families want to see.
Having said that,
uh-huh.
the fitness involved to do that, and Shakira especially, I mean, I'm serious there.
And we're back.
No, I mean real fitness. They did not move. They ran and they jumped and they sang. I mean, it was pretty remarkable.
No, they did not sing.
They didn't sing?
Yeah, it was lip sync.
Still, I thought the choreography of that thing was just amazing. So props to them for that. The other thing I'm getting is better than Adam Levine. It's better than Adam Levine in Maroon 5. He was shirtless and working everything he had last year. Pardon me, I was just working what I had, and it wasn't very much.
I forgot he even had a show last year.
Yeah, well, a lot of people said it was regrettable. Rolling Stone reviewed all of the halftime shows ever. They said the very worst of them was the Black Eyed Peas. Then after that, it was the very first Super Bowl, up to when they started to modernize them with college marching bands and Up With People and Disney characters. But they just completely dumped on Black Eyed Peas as the worst of all time. But Adam Levine and Maroon 5 is down there for some of you. Over there in Iowa is WGN Radio's Ryan Burrow, not to talk about the Super Bowl. Ryan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'll talk about the Super Bowl, whatever you want to talk about. I'm good.
Well, that's not why ABC has you there covering the caucus, as I understand it.
No, they want me to enjoy the beautiful weather in Cedar Rapids on February 3rd. Which, by the way, I mean, it's sunny out. I mean, I've been talking with a couple affiliate stations, including Miami. They're like, oh my gosh, it's 30 degrees. Yeah, but, you know, deal with it, you know? Suck it up, buttercup.
30 in February in Iowa or Chicago is not bad.
Yeah.
So you're there covering the caucus. Will you literally then go to some of those places this evening?
Yeah, there's an armory not too far away that we'll be at, and this is the site of one of these Democratic caucuses. It's going to be a wild ride. I admit I've never been to it before, but just reading about it and hearing how this process is going to take place, it's very interesting because you have your first tally of the people who are there, and if your candidate is not deemed viable, then you get to pick a second person.
And viability is determined by whether or not you get 15%?
You got it. Now, what makes this very interesting is, with all of the canvassing and all of the campaigning that's been done here, caucus turnout has only been about 16% in recent years. But think about that. You and I, we're from Illinois. We go into the poll, or maybe people from Indiana, Wisconsin listening. You go into the polling station, you cast your ballot, you leave. This, you're gathered with members of your community. They see who you support. You see who they support. And you have an opportunity to woo them one way or another. So it may make you look a little differently about your neighbors when you go and ask them for a cup of sugar down the road. You know, I mean, it's kind of cool because you actually see the progress instead of just pulling a lever and walking out. But on the other hand, too, I suppose it can be a bit intimidating knowing that everyone's watching you.
It's new, too, this year, Ryan, right, where they're going to release, typically this is a race for delegates to the county convention, so they release the delegate count, who wins. But they're also going to announce tonight who won, who was the majority first vote recipient, correct?
Exactly, and that is a direct result of what happened in 2016. The Bernie Sanders people said, look, we won that initial popular vote. And it was because when people took their second candidate, they went over to Hillary Clinton. That barely tipped the scales in her favor. So what's going to happen now is those first numbers are going to be revealed publicly, which could have an impact on where people go the second time around. But you have a potential, because ultimately it is the state delegates who decide based on the equivalency rating. I mean, you have a potential for three of these candidates to walk out of here saying that they won. One saying they won the first one, one saying they won the last one, and then one saying that they won the state delegates. Yeah, exactly.
If you really want to get into the weeds, Google ranked choice voting, because that's a little bit of what this is. Imagine that. If the first time through you win, but you don't have 50%, well, then are you really the winner? More people said no to you than said yes to you. So then let's do it again, and let's do it again. And the people who got the fewest votes get lopped off. They get to then attach themselves to some other candidate, and maybe they'll choose the person who wasn't in first place anymore, but second place or third place. And that's the way ranked choice voting goes. And it ensures that eventually you get 50 plus percent, but it might not be the person that won the first time. I don't know if that made any sense, what I just said, but that's what that feels like to me. So people gather in a room. It's, at least it's transparent, eh, Ryan? I mean, maybe this is the way democracy should be. If my guy didn't get enough votes, then you come over and talk to me and persuade me, and maybe I'll come to your side of the room.
Well, that's why a lot of the people I've been speaking with, I've been saying, oh, who are you backing? You know, they may be at a Joe Biden. I went to a lot of these campaign events, Biden, Buttigieg, Warren, Bernie Sanders. And some people, you know, they say they're still looking for information. They're still gathering information. But many of them told me, I'm not going to decide till caucus day. I mean, I might get swayed one way or another while I'm actually there in the gym, in the church, in the armory.
I think a challenge for people who are going to vote Democrat is, should I vote for the person I like the most, or should I vote for the person I think would win? If you're a Bernie Sanders supporter, for instance, you might want to vote for him, but you also fear that Bernie is exactly the sort of person Trump could beat, so then you don't vote for Bernie. That's the challenge for a Democratic voter.
Everybody I've spoken with says their primary issue, outside of agriculture, outside of education, outside of healthcare, who can beat Trump in November? And most of them told me, even with this rift that we're seeing between the Sanders people and the Clinton people and, you know, Joe Biden getting involved, they tell me now that they would not sit at home because of this president. If their candidate doesn't win, their candidate doesn't get the nomination, they'll still come out and back whoever the Democratic nominee will be.
Our Ryan Burroughs in Cedar Rapids, right?
Yeah, and I think the train's going by here right now.
It's a perfect sound effect. It's what I imagine in Iowa. You have a great day. We'll listen for your reports this evening.
Take care.
WGN, John Williams, 312-981-7200 is how you call in. Some of you were reflecting over the weekend, not about the Super Bowl or the unseasonably pleasant weather we had, but the fact that 9 years ago yesterday was when we had that blizzard that closed Lakeshore Drive. I'll never forget that day. That night, that storm, they said, hey, everybody, there's a storm coming. It's going to close Lakeshore Drive. So whatever you do, don't drive on Lakeshore Drive. And everybody in Chicago went, oh, my God, I've got to get out of here. Quick, get on Lakeshore Drive. So then cars were snowed onto. People were stranded.
CTA buses were on the drive.
I know, which was really spectacular. I mean, I don't know what CTA buses were doing out there. I didn't then, and I don't now. I guess they were trying to get people out of the city as quick as they can. It was almost like one of these apocalyptic movies. The storm is coming. And the storm came over the lake, and I guess down from the north, and boom, got snowed in. And it's funny sometimes how you know you're on Lakeshore Drive, and that 100 yards away, millions of people are having sandwiches, drinking coffee, and living heated and comfortable lives, but you could be a million miles away because it was a whiteout and you couldn't get through the snow. Maybe you couldn't get out of your car. You didn't know what to do. Some people stayed in their cars. Some people got out and now began to make these epic feeling journeys to civilization. You're on Lakeshore Drive. But it was that sort of fast and furious. It was kind of fun, actually. Some of us got snowed in at work or decided not to leave downtown. That was a decision for a lot of you. Rather than try and get away from this thing, just hunker down here. So all you could do was go to some bars and hotels in the area and drink sidecars.
That's the only thing you could do.
It was a disaster. I walked from a blizzard from the train station to my hotel. No place was there a cabin site because they ordered me to come down to work that afternoon.
Oh, they told you to come in.
They
for
said
the next
you have
morning.
To come for the next morning, yeah. And so I wasn't WGN. I'll say that.
Well, that was a different place.
Well, I worked for a different traffic company.
Yeah.
At the time, and they said we'll put you up in the hotel, but you have to get here. And literally, I walked in a blizzard. I couldn't even see the street signs. I didn't know where I was. I was petrified.
Isn't that weird? I mean,
it was horrifying.
Traversed this cities for years and years and years, some of us, and yet I'm just telling you, it was like another world.
It was. And I just saw two Navy guys walking down the street, and they were going to a bar. And they're like, hey, do you want to come with us? Because I was literally the only person on the street. There was nobody out. And I did make it to the hotel.
I went home because I thought I could get in the next morning. You know, I was probably coming in at, I don't know, 8 or 9 or something, and thought I'd take the train. And I got to the train station, and the tracks were drifted over. Like, well, there's no trains running today. So I ended up driving in that morning.
And you were able to get in, huh?
Well, when you're the only one on the road and it's a six-lane road, it's easier. But
I guess so. Because I guess the plows had made some progress.
The next morning was surreal, yeah.
Able to keep some lanes open. Beth Swerk was my producer at the time. Kristen Decker was a colleague of ours at the time. I think maybe Kristen was producing here as well at the time. And they shared with me a picture of the three of us at a bar that night, just kind of not doing anything other than waiting for the next morning to go to work the next day. The company wasn't real thrilled with our expense reports, and there was some discussion about whether or not all of that would be covered.
I'm surprised some of the restaurants were open, because I couldn't find one that was open at that time.
I seem to remember that, too. And it seems to me that people were getting stuck on the highways as well. Was that the year then that we sent the Pizza Angel out to?
No, that was a different storm.
That was a different storm.
Yeah.
A young lady said, hey, for those people that might be spending 24 hours stranded on I-80, for instance, she said, I'll deliver them pizzas, because we said, let's at least get those people some food, but how do we get it out there? And she picked up a bunch of pizzas, put them in her car, and went out onto the road and was knocking on people's windows. Hi, do you need some pizza? This is from John. And then she'd go to the next car. That was the kind of storms that we had. And I miss that a little bit, to be honest with you. I'm not wishing that on you if you're going to get stranded in your car, but wasn't that kind of fun?
No. Not to me it was, until I got home the next day.
Kind of knew Mary was going to put it that way.
So the story I'm hearing, though, is that John and Kristen and Beth had a party, and Mary was downtown by herself.
I didn't know you were in town that night, too, Mary.
Yeah.
We were in the Tribune Tower and just stayed at the Intercontinental next door.
I think I was at the Hilton Garden. I don't remember. Yeah.
And I don't remember if the rates were higher or lower, like they had, you know, a surplus of rooms because nobody was coming into the city, or everybody was stuck and the rates were higher. I don't remember what the room rate was, but I do know that we all kind of got a room and then walked to work the next morning. Michigan Avenue was just a barren snowscape.
Now that was kind of fun. I was walking to work at 3 o'clock in the morning, and that was actually kind of fun. I didn't fear for my life at all.
9 years ago yesterday. 708, though, about the Super Bowl said, I haven't heard anyone talk about Mike Ditka and how alone and confused he seemed at the 100 best pregame ceremony, or how few Bears were mentioned, especially defensively. Says Kathy in Oak Park. Kathy, I can't speak to that. I didn't watch that part of the broadcast.
Yeah, he's aging.
I suppose it's hard on a lot of these guys. I think that, again, I think the NFL takes the Super Bowl as an opportunity to promote its own brand. And sometimes they do a good job. They talked about, for instance, the numbers of black men who get shot in this country. And they had a commercial about that and how we all need to, you know, address this issue. It was a very serious, sobering spot amidst all of the glee and energy of Super Bowl coverage. But they also had one and it said, okay, so this is the last game of the year. You are now going to have to deal with a brain disorder called football deficiency syndrome.
Wow, that was bad taste. You're
right. And my son and I are watching that, and I thought, oh, that's supposed to be jokey and funny. And then they said, it's science. You need to get help with your thing. And we looked at each other like, they do know about the brain injuries in the NFL, right?
And that was the promo for the XFL or something? Was that it?
I think it was, maybe it was Steve, but it was an NFL-branded promotional spot.
It didn't occur to me until you just pointed that out.
Oh, my gosh. We're looking at that going, you've got to be. I've always imagined rooms of people with bad coffee and clipboards, and somebody says, I got an idea. And it sounds good to a few of them, but always I'm counting on somebody in that room to go, oh, you remember that CTE thing that is killing the guys? Right. Let's not do that one. Where was that person in the room that day?
Talking about the NFL and their branding, though, the kid running the football into the stadium.
Great.
I don't know if you talked about that, but that was fantastic.
And then all of the children that were cheering the crowd on.
Yeah.
You could look at that cynically and say it's everything they can to keep the sport alive as more and more youth are deciding not to play. But maybe that's looking at it too deeply. The kid was adorable, very athletic.
The way it was filmed running across the country, too, was just great.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's what I want, though, John. I want sunglasses or some sort of app. Because I think there were more celebrities in these commercials last night than I've ever remembered.
Completely agree.
And so I need some sort of filter to tell me who they are. Right?
Right. I was with my son, who's fortunately younger than me. Kids tend to be that. And I, so every now and then I go, Griff, who is that? And he'd go, you know, that's Porky Banana, or that's that's Little Bunny, or
but,
something.
But I
go,
know, oh, okay. I'm sure there were older ones, too, that Griff didn't know, you know, or people younger than Griff didn't know. So it's not just being old.
Yeah, who's the guy in the Stain commercial? I can't remember, and the I didn't know who commercial? He was. Yeah. With the Stain.
Well, there was a
the
lot.
The kids had to tell me that
he was from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, yes. And if you don't watch that,
although
how
that's
you gonna know?
One of the longest running sitcoms in history. Sunny in Philadelphia, and... that was an example to me of a commercial campaign that you saw in the Super Bowl, and I guess you do in some other bowls, where you got to get it and you've got to like it, because then that thread ran throughout the game.
Right.
And if you were on board, each commercial was funnier. But if it wasn't working for you, I think each ensuing spot was a waste of money.
I liked the wife in that. I thought she was funny.
Charlie Day. Thank
Charlie
you.
Charlie Day, that's it.
See, I didn't know.
It's not the tip of our tongue.
Was I supposed to know her? I didn't know that.
Well, put it this way.
No, that's
Charlie
the guy
Day's
with the
guy.
Stain.
Oh.
Well, that makes the point completely. Although Fox, speaking of branding, then takes the opportunity to brand. I mean, the whole world's watching, right? You can sell anything you want. And what did they put all of their promotional energy behind? The Masked Singer. And I looked again to Griff, and I just said, oh, man, I wish they had something else to promote, because I don't understand this show, and I can't believe this is all they've got. He said, Masked Singer is global. This is a gigantic show for them.
So I tweeted
it's
out
thoroughly appropriate.
I tweeted out that very thing. I said my favorite commercial is the parody of this show, The Masked Singer. And someone else who I know, a friend of mine, said it's in 20 world markets.
Yeah. And the judges and the people that appear on that are legit. And yeah, you know, Jenny McCarthy, I actually wrote the names of them all down, Steve, because you're right. I didn't know every, and I don't even understand that show.
Yeah, and like, I promise I'll never watch it.
There are celebrities in those hilarious, bizarre costumes, but they're not famous singers. They're just famous people who are singing. And so the idea is, can you guess who it is in the costume? But then, every now and then, they'll tell a backstory about themselves, the way maybe a celebrity would on Dancing with the Stars. Sort of the tearful, it's important to me to get over this hurdle in my life, and da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, I lost my bunny when I was six.
So, if they continue to talk like that in their normal voice, you might be able to recognize it. So then they garble it. They make it high-pitched. They sound like an alien or something, which is weird now, because they're sometimes telling these poignant anecdotes, and they sound like a Martian. It kind of loses some of its drama, if you ask me, but it seems to work, and the crowd shots, the people are so into it, and the judges are very good and animated. And I don't understand it. I just don't know. I just, like, if you said pick a show that's going to be a global phenomenon. But it's funny, because the more Griff and I were watching it and talking about it, he said, see, you're getting into it now. You're wondering, who is that Masked Singer? And what will they say, or who will they be?
Did you watch it then after the...
I did. Super,
oh, you did.
Yeah.
Did I hear right there's going to be a Masked Dancer show? I thought I heard that somewhere.
Why not?
Oh, boy.
Early in the episode, Griff says, I'm pretty sure that's Lil Wayne. I can tell by the singing that's Lil Wayne. And at the end, they take off the mask. It was Lil Wayne. I don't know what the payoff then is. I guess you know it's Lil Wayne, and then they move on to, oh yeah, Lil Wayne wasn't a good enough singer, so he gets kicked off, and then at least we see who he was. That's it. So so the Masked Singer is evidently, if you're just catching up with America, that's something that sort of needs to be on your radar. James wanted to clue us in on something here. James, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John, how you doing? Long time listener. I've called
you
before.
Sir.
Yeah, you're kind of making the Masked Singer kind of like a joke, and maybe not really explaining it well. What it is you do have some professional singers, but they're not really superstars, and they come on, and you got to try to figure out who they are. Or you have somebody like Seal. You remember Seal? He came out with he did that for his kids. And they were trying to guess who this guy was, and they could not figure out who he was, whereas he was one of the world's most famous singers. The point of the show is, the costume is, they come out with these outrageous costumes, just kind of as a little offshoot of their personality. And
oh, that's right.
Secret, Right. Nobody knows who these singers are, not even their kids or their families. It's really tight-lipped about that, and they have to try to guess who the singer is. Now, sometimes if somebody has a unique voice, for example, Patti LaBelle was on there a couple years ago, I think one of the first seasons. And, I mean, so you do have some famous singers on there, and they do that kind of like for fun, but at the same time, they try to disguise their voice, or they try to sing other types of music that you wouldn't think that they would sing. That's what makes the show interesting. For example, let me give you an example. I know he's passed out, but Glenn Campbell. It's just like Glenn Campbell was sort of doing like maybe more of a hip-hop type of song. You know, that's the fun of the show. That's the premise of the show, and it is based on a show in Japan, I think, is where it started.
It does look like one of those Asian exports from Korea or Japan. Very animated, very colorful, very bizarre, very fun is the key word. And you're right, when they were talking, they were sort of giving clues. And when the judges were trying to figure out who it was, Steve, I hope you're following all of this, they would go, wait a minute, they said that. I'll bet that means this. So they were trying to decipher who that was based on what they said, too, right?
Yes. And keep in mind the panelists they have, although Jenny McCarthy is not really a singer, but you have the gentleman, Thick, I can't think of his first name. He's there, and then you have another gal, Nicole Scherzinger, who's been a longtime singer. And, you know, you have various other guests, singers.
Nicole Scherzinger from the Pussycat Dolls.
And they try to guess, you know, who the singer is. And they know
Robin
all
Thicke.
These people in the business.
Yeah, Ken Jeong, Robin Thicke, Jenny McCarthy, and Nicole Scherzinger from the Pussycat Dolls. So, I get it. I mean, I get all of that. I've always looked at that and thought, that is so ridiculous. I can't get into it, but maybe I should give it a try, huh, James?
I think it's a fun show. I mean, it's just a matter of taste. You know, it's just like the last thing I can do is like say is like if you had some actors and they were doing like bit parts with masks on, and you would have to try to figure out who the actors were. It's the same thing, only it's with singers.
I'm glad you called, James. You helped me out a lot today.
Yep. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye-bye. It's 10:24. By the way, speaking of comparing one show to another, is we asked you what you thought of the halftime show. I didn't even anticipate this, but the USA Today has an article, and it says, wow, the halftime show was either empowering to women or it was objectifying women. And the more I thought about that, I thought, man, maybe they got a point there. When I brought it up, we've just gotten a ton of calls and text messages today. And I must say, it's split, but more in favor of those of you that felt, yeah, that was not appropriate for family viewing.
Okay, if they were objectifying women, were they not also objectifying men?
When?
With the men in
dancers?
Suspenders dancing and thing. I mean,
who was looking at them?
The focus was definitely on Shakira.
I understand that, but J-Lo. I mean, if isn't it the same?
Well, look at like Bruno Mars when he did his show.
Oh, he is the best.
I mean, come on. His was fantastic. Did he have all these half-naked people?
No, he did not.
He did a nice, clean show that was the most unbelievable, entertaining show.
And except for the fact that Adam Levine was shirtless last year, generally that's what we do. We ask the women to be like that. The men we grant more artistic space to. That is, their craft should be sufficient. But boy, the ladies, you still have to sell the sizzle. Now, maybe that's objectifying, but the empowering part is that, dang, she's doing it at 50? Wow. I mean, so that's something.
That's now, all she's doing. She's showing off her fitness skills and her dancing. I mean, okay.
Well, but I mean,
we
that's how she makes a living. She's a singer-dancer, and she was good at that, right, Mary?
Oh, yeah, she's a fantastic dancer. Singer? I don't think she's all
she's
that fantastic.
No, she's not. No,
I'm sorry.
You're
I thought
absolutely
she,
right
Shakira,
about that.
I thought, was better than her, actually, in
and
the show.
Several texts reminding me of the following. John, the border between Kansas and Missouri runs directly through the middle of Kansas City. Justin, you're on WGN. I got half a minute, Justin. What do you want to say?
I just want to point out, I know earlier last week in the show you guys were talking about Joe Buck. I'm going to be honest with you. Watching the Super Bowl, I think it's his face and his forehead.
Somebody said, I put a fork in my ear last night when he was talking.
he has a very large head. He does.
He's made some bad hair decisions, too. But never mind that, Justin. What about his commentary, his words? Were they good or bad?
I think they were all right. you know, I to be honest with you, I don't think there's anybody else that I have in mind that would be a better candidate for the position. I mean, I think Aikman was good as well.
Yeah, sure.
I think there was some good color commentary.
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you. See, Bertrand. Okay, it's 10:33. I know we've talked a lot about the Super Bowl today, but we're Americans, and that's what we do. The USA Today, since the beginning of the... I don't know when they started this. I was going to say since the beginning of the Super Bowl, but that's not true. Larry Pecorella's in our studio. How long has the USA Today done their ad meter? Do you know, Larry?
Since at least the late 80s.
Yeah. It seems to me like as long as we've been talking about Super Bowl commercials.
Right.
Larry Pecorella's back in our studio. He's the founder and creative director of Comma Music. Now, he is in the business of producing commercials, Super Bowl commercials among them. He told us last Friday that he was the guy that was involved in the production of that famous Michael Jordan Larry Bird ad.
To be clear, it's the music production.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the sound and the music, that's what you do, is instrumental part of it, right?
We think so.
Well, I do, too. Listen, you're on a radio station right now.
Right.
So your daughter is also in the business, correct?
Yeah. She's the head of production of High Dive.
And which is a Chicago-based production
agency
company.
That produced two of the top five on the USA Ad Meter commercials last night. The Rocket Mortgage, Jason Momoa, is number five, which we did the music for. And the number one Jeep, Groundhog Day with Bill Murray spot.
Let's walk through that number one spot first. So if you didn't see it, this is a commercial for Jeep. It's a parody of Groundhog Day, where every day Bill Murray wakes up in the same day and he can't get out of it. So here's the beginning of the ad.
And put your okay, campers, rise and shine. It's Groundhog Day! And don't forget your booties, because it's cold out there today.
Phil? Hey, Phil?
No, not you.
It's me, Ned Ryerson!
Bill Murray looks like Bill Murray, but Ned Ryerson looks like he hasn't aged a day.
Amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
Amazing.
And so you immediately have this connection. Oh, wow, they're doing some bit with this. I mean, right away... 10 seconds into the spot, you're already loving it, right?
Right.
But then what are they going to do with it? Okay, but there's something different now, where instead of the day playing itself over and over again, Bill Murray in the commercial says, well, there's something different here.
That's different.
Good job.
Hey!
He's taking the groundhog and he's making a fast getaway with the Jeep. With the Jeep Gladiator. And off he goes. Okay, so then the next day...
The next it's not day. Personal. It's just a game.
Not a bad day, huh?
I don't know where we parked. I was following you.
He's become great friends with the groundhog. They go to play whack-a-mole. He says, don't take any offense. It's not personal. And they're watching the night sky. And then at the very end, they're lost in a parking lot. And that's it. But the Jeep, along with Bill and the groundhog, are the stars of that. And I knew that commercial was going to do well.
Yeah.
Props to them, your daughter, and that company.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, usually you hear an idea like that, and you think, oh, they're going to mess this up. And, boy, they just nailed it.
And you were telling me off the air that the turnaround on that was pretty tight.
Yeah. I mean, I know I was working with the agency on January 8th, I want to say, on the Jason Momoa spot, and my daughter Jen got a text and goes, uh-oh. And I'm like, what's wrong? She goes, I think we're going to work with Bill Murray. And then she tells the story. I'm like, well, how are you going to get this done?
This is January 8th. The Super Bowl's in
February 2nd.
3 weeks.
Yeah. And I don't know how they did it. Miraculously, talented, creative people working till 4 in the morning every night.
So that commercial was then essentially conceived, cast, written, and produced in 3 weeks.
Correct.
And here in town, was that in Woodstock?
Yeah, Woodstock.
Was that latest snow we had? Was that real snow then?
That was real snow, yeah.
How fortunate for them.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah. Everything was done in town. And then I know Cutters edited it and another country mixed it.
I was hoping for a cutaway to Andy McDowell. I guess you can only fit so much. And that's the problem with a commercial like that too, right? if you get too clever or too creative
Correct.
Or put in too much, I think a lot,
you
of
see a lot of those spots,
a lot of
that.
Those commercials, I didn't know what we were selling. Correct. And I'm like, oh, there's a good bit here. Now there's a new bit. Oh, there's a punchline. And it's overload.
Correct. You know, the best Super Bowl spots over the years to me are just, it's a simple idea. You can explain it in one sentence to somebody and they go, and right away they know, oh yeah, that spot. I remember that spot. Those are the best spots.
The kid gives a soda to Mean Joe Green.
Boom.
Larry Bird and Michael Jordan shoot shots.
Correct.
Bill Murray takes a Jeep through that movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, those are always the best. I mean, you know, the Hyundai spot was funny last night, too, because, you know, the pack the car.
That one reminded me of the ribbit spots for Budweiser, where the frogs just go ribbit, Budweiser, Budweiser. And I'm like, what a stupid commercial. That one was memorable for a lot of people. Yeah. Promise me you didn't work on that
one. No, I didn't work on that.
Okay, good. Okay, so who's Jason Momoa?
Aquaman.
He's Aquaman.
He's a big star.
He's a movie star.
Huge movie star.
And a big burly guy.
You know, and that's the other thing about Super Bowl spots. You have to get somebody that's so recognizable to entire generations that, you know, then the spot will work. If you don't know who it is, well, you don't get the gag, right?
It's funny you say that, Larry Pecorola, creative director of Comma Music, who's worked on commercials for years. That was a conversation we had before you got here.
Okay.
We knew that some of the people in some of these commercials were famous, but we didn't know
right.
who they were.
This is no longer 1960, 1970. We all watch the same shows and same movies, right? So there's a fragmentation. So that's why the commercials that you know, have these simple ideas. Jason Momoa is pretty famous now. You know, I mean...
Oh, trust me. I knew that was a big
name. Here's
the
thing real quick. Try and picture somebody else doing that role that he did in that commercial last night. Somebody else, and you can't figure it. Like, that's really written specifically for him. It had to be somebody so recognizable, so strong, whatever.
The Rock could have done that. Maybe.
Maybe, and that's about it. Like, there's not many, right?
Sure, absolutely.
So,
yeah, if you just got a big dude or a lesser star, then it doesn't work around the world.
Right. Correct.
So let's start just with this is audio, but we can describe it too. Start that commercial, Producer Elif.
It's the one place I can let my guard down.
He's coming home.
That's where I can just kick back and be totally comfortable in my own skin.
And as he's walking through his home, Jason Momoa is now pulling off his big arms to reveal that he's got skinny little arms.
Right.
And his abs aren't thick and muscular. He's got he's a slightly built guy who's not that hairy. He pulls off a wig. And you realize he's just some average-looking schlub.
He can be comfortable.
The visuals in that are astounding. That's like a movie.
Yeah. And I think they did get one of the better L.A. Hollywood... visual effects companies. I'm not sure of the name, but I know they work on Avengers and that kind of stuff.
So did you work on that commercial?
Yeah, we did the music. So okay. That piano you're hearing in the background is me.
It's very... Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And then one of my other composers, Peter Schmidt, he played the guitar at the end that mimics what he's doing on the guitar.
That's not him playing the guitar?
No, that's not.
Because I watched that and I thought, well, I'll bet Larry's people did that. No, that's actually Momoa doing
good.
That.
I'm glad that. I'm glad.
Oh, you completely faked me out.
We fooled you. Yeah,
you guys were string syncing, if you will.
Correct. We had to come up with a melody. Pete did. He came up with a melody that worked exactly with what that guy was playing at the time. And
it's kind of chill.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, this is the thing. Yeah. That's just another level
that
of commercial production that we don't think about at home.
Right. And we slave over.
When he takes off his boots and throws them on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Was that mic'd in real time, or was that sound effect added later, do you suppose?
Usually you go through it, and you have a bunch of source material from the shoot, and if it sounds great, you use it. If not,
you can dub it over.
Correct.
The guitar sounded how, Elif?
Home is where you feel the most comfortable, and Rocket Mortgage helps you feel comfortable financing that home with a personalized and convenient experience centered around you. Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage.
So that's the end with him playing the guitar. That's you.
Right. Well, that's actually Pete playing, but that's us. Pete. Yeah. So the idea there is, you know, not only do you have to match what he's doing, it's got to sound like it's in the room with him.
Oh, so it's got to echo a little bit the way a room like that might.
Exactly. You got to match up that room. The whole idea is you can't think that guitar was recorded any other time than what you're seeing right there. So, yeah.
Well, it looked like his fingers were plucking the string. Well, I guess you guys know what you're doing, so you pluck the strings when he plucked the strings.
Yeah. Now, you know, we have the original source, and you do not want to hear that.
He doesn't play it so well, huh?
No, no.
I had a couple questions for you about a couple of other commercials. What makes a good one? What makes a bad one?
Sure.
And some of you have questions, too. My number's 312-981-7200. Larry Pecorella's here. He's the founder and creative director of a place called Comma Music. We visited with him on Friday of last week, talking a little bit about these commercials in advance, although he couldn't tell us what was what. And then we also talked about his business, Comma Music, where you can download, where you can subscribe to a service that gets you music for the videos that everybody seems to be making these days. That's at commamusic.com. Okay, we'll pick it up here in a minute. This is WGN. This is John Williams. We're just catching up with Larry Pecorella from Comma Music. commamusic.com is his site. And I was just so happy for Larry because I knew two of the commercials that his family was involved in the production of. One was the Rocket Mortgage spot, and one was going to be the Jeep ad. But you didn't want to tip your hand beforehand. The people behind these things say, wait.
Correct.
And so then the commercials come up, and doggone it, those were two really good commercials.
Yeah.
So then do you guys get residuals? Will those commercials get paid more, and then will you get paid more? Will they get played more, and will you get paid more?
No, it doesn't necessarily work that way. It depends on... it depends on certain things that have to do with licensing and whatever. So it's not necessarily that we'll make more money, but we'll get more visibility, which is nice.
So now maybe somebody else goes, who did that one
Correct.
Where Momoa takes off his arms? Give me some of that. Who is behind that?
Correct.
So then the visual people, so then the team might be reassembled.
Right. Right.
In theory. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's a Super Bowl spot, right? So in our industry, that is the biggest. You know, that's the biggest platform. And when you have that on your reel, in your portfolio, it's a real.
Then what's it like for you to watch that? Are you watching it like a party with a bunch of friends, or are you too focused? It's your work.
It's both, because it's usually like last night. I was with the agency that did the spots, and they actually were at my daughter's house. She had a Super Bowl party. Coincidentally, it was also her son's third birthday. It was her grandmother's 90th birthday. It was Groundhog Day. It was all this stuff. So it was a big party for that. But trust me, when the commercials come on, everybody's quiet.
And then when the commercial is over, do you all cheer?
Yeah.
Hooray, like scored a touchdown?
Yeah, it was funny because we had a TV downstairs and a TV upstairs. And because of the internet or whatever, they're like on a 3-second delay. You could hear the cheer upstairs go on and then the cheer downstairs.
But they aren't scoring touchdowns. They're watching the Jeep commercial.
No.
Yeah.
The only time I heard something on that was when Mahomes got hit really hard near the goal line that one time, and the ball came out.
And the ball came out.
Oh, and we thought maybe that was the beginning of the commercial, but no, it was, yeah.
So here's another one that you reminded me of. This is the Doritos commercial.
Make your move, cowboy.
Sam Elliott and Lil Nas in this commercial.
Right.
And they're selling Doritos. It was a pretty funny commercial.
Right. The reason I mentioned it was last week you asked me about licensing of music for commercials, and I said it works when it's really part of the fabric of the commercial, and this is. Both of the, you know, they're using the Spaghetti Western thing in the front, the Marconi thing.
They're in a duel, and they're each,
one
is one upping the other with what they're able to do. My horse can do this, can your horse do that?
Correct.
I can do this, can you
That's
do that?
That's a really good use of licensed music.
Sam Elliott's mustache actually quivers and sync with the music. Funny spot.
Great spot. Yeah.
And it doesn't work maybe it works, but it really works well with that song.
Right. Well, I think that's, yeah.
Without that you don't have the commercial, huh? Where the speaking of music, the Cheetos commercial with MC Hammer, where he took you to the genesis of "You Can't Touch This."
Yeah, that's funny.
I thought that commercial worked too.
Yeah, works great. Simple gag.
Yeah,
and it's a musical hook. It's a musical gag. Everybody knows it. You know, here's the thing. That song is how old? Right, 30 something old.
Yeah,
but. Because it's ubiquitous, you've heard it over and over again because people use that as a gag. You can't touch this. So it works great. And MC Hammer's kind of a comical figure. You know, he's an important figure, but he's kind of a comical figure.
I described him as a one-hit wonder. When I first saw the preview of that midweek last week, I said, well, you know, he did You Can't Touch This, so we'll go back and sort of play with the genesis of that. But then, boom, I get hit from MC Hammer fans. And
yeah,
he had four hits, or five hits.
He's an important figure. I don't want to demean MC Hammer at all.
Oh, I think he can take
He's an important figure.
But I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I just thought of him as the guy with the funny pants.
It's not Vanilla Ice. Now you'll hear from Vanilla Ice.
That's what it was. So to me, he's kind of a Vanilla Ice guy who had a moment and then it went away.
No, but this song, and let's face it, he's ridden this song for a lot of, you know, a long time and spoofing on it.
Right. So
and the pants and the whole look.
I wonder, speaking of spoofing on it, so Bill Murray evidently was game to come back and do the Jeep ad. He doesn't mind revisiting his role in that.
Well, the only thing I know from what I overheard is Bill Murray has never done a commercial, national ad, ever. And I don't think he plans on ever doing another one.
Huh.
So this must have meant a lot to him.
And do you know, did they have a chance to get Andy McDowell back in that spot?
I have no
Would
idea.
You make some calls for me? Because
sure.
I'm an Andy McDowell fan. I thought she was just delightful in the movie. I'm not sure everybody agrees with me on that, but there's that. All right. So commamusic.com is your website. That's
right.
Your company.
Thank you.
You guys are in the business of creating original music, both for commercials, Super Bowl commercials,
right.
But private at-home use too, right?
Well, yeah, we create original music for advertising agencies, but then we have a catalog online that people can license from for their own YouTube videos and that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. I borrowed a little of your music for a promo that I made. Elif, just go ahead and grab that. I wanted to play this for him. So here's how his site works, by the way. Say you have a video that you've made at home. And you need to pay for this music, but it's a subscription service,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think the lowest level for which you get great access
$11 a month.
$11 a month. Your kids or small company can afford this. But so I had a call from last week, and the woman was talking. We were talking about the great lengths we go to keep our pets alive or just give them good lives, right? And she called in and told this really sweet story. So then I wanted to put some music underneath it. I went to commamusic.com, and I thought, what word comes to mind when I'm hearing her talk about this relationship she
good.
Had with her dog?
Yeah.
And I thought, home. She feels complete at home with the dog. She went to get the dog fixed and then brought the dog home. Home, and to me, was the right word. So I typed in home. And I had about 10 options. And some of them were a little too fun. Some of them were a little too dramatic. But one piece of music, I thought, spoke to what I was feeling with her call. Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi. I lived in the little village. This was a long time ago. I'm 86 years old now. But my dog had broken her leg. And of course, at that time, I was 12 years old, they put dogs down.
Yeah.
And I cried and cried. My mom says, all right, you can try the vet. But we had no nearby vets. We had to go all the way to Cicero. So I held the dog. And at the time, we had red streetcars, you know, with the conductor at the front and the cashier at the back. So he allowed me to stand at the back. I rode on the streetcar, people who looked at me. I went to the vet, and he said, well, we'll try. So he fashioned a splint, and I cried and I cried. And I said, I had 50 cents in my hand. I said, I'll pay you every week. He looked at me and he said, no charge. No charge. And I went home, and I had the dog for 8 more years.
How about that?
Never forgot it. Never forgot that vet either.
What a lovely story. Thanks for sharing that, Elizabeth.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
So, wow. On behalf of her, thank you for that music.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that was beautiful.
That music complemented without competing with
correct.
The message.
Yeah. That's what we talked about last week.
That's
the essence. How do you bring across the emotion and without really getting in the way?
Yeah. Well, good to see you, my friend. Anything else we can do for you before I let you go?
No, Always good to visit with you.
You working on any cool commercials I'm going to see on TV anytime soon?
We're working on some stuff.
Yeah. But you can't say. You can't tell me. That's the way his business is sometimes. Yeah. Well, this isn't a commercial for you, but I appreciate your helping the show out, so I'll just pass it along one more time. CommaMusic.com. Larry Pecorella's company was the one that was involved in the music mix on the Rocket Mortgage ad, where Jason Momoa takes off his outer shell to reveal himself to be just
at home and comfortable.
At home and comfortable. I know I said an ordinary schlub like the rest of us, but no, that's not the message. It's at home and comfortable.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the ad meter winner, the Jeep ad, was a great story for us here in Chicago, too. By the way, Steve, did you chime in on best food I ate over the weekend was?
Best food I ate over the weekend? No. I made some like eggs in marinara sauce last night, which were very good.
Nothing screams Super Bowl party like eggs in a marinara sauce.
We just watched together at home.
It was just the two of you?
Mm-hmm.
I was this close yesterday to watching the Super Bowl by myself, and I thought, what kind of...
loser, say it.
I didn't want to say that because I thought, oh, I'm sure a lot of people watch the Super Bowl alone, but my life has usually been watching it with a bunch of people. And now I found myself for the first time about to watch the Super Bowl all by myself. And I didn't entirely like that feeling. And I also kind of liked that feeling, to be honest with you. I was a little mixed about it. And then Griff came over and we ate a couple frozen pizzas and watched it. And that was a swell way to watch it, too. But, you know, you get it that Thanksgiving, pick 'em, 4th of July, and the Super Bowl are maybe the days where you hope if you've got people, you will be with them on that day.
I was all alone.
Join WGN Radio and WGN TV at the biggest stair climb in Chicago. Have you signed up for the Fight for Air Climb? It's presented by United Healthcare at Presidential Towers, and that's right around the corner now, Sunday, March 8th. Your first step is to register or donate at WGNRadio.com. That's what I did. And then /events, WGNRadio.com/events, or fightforairclimb.org. You can climb one or all four of the towers. There's 2,340 steps if you do it all. The American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb is March 8th. Register at WGNRadio.com. The random observations from WGN Radio's listeners about the halftime show include some of you reminding us that whatever you saw on Shakira and J-Lo, or what you didn't see on Shakira and J-Lo, is not any different than the outfits you see on Dancing with the Stars. I think that's about right. And wow, is that a good show. And to think, John, they wouldn't show Elvis from the waist down on the Ed Sullivan Show. My, how times have changed. True enough. By the way, our Mega Monday Morning Quiz. On Monday mornings, we do a quiz sponsored by Mega Home Improvements. So we've cleverly called it the Mega Monday Morning Quiz. And today it's about the food that we eat. I thought that would be appropriate after the Super Bowl and all. And the quizzes are always about something in Chicago. So it's the number one chicken joint in Chicago, the number one place for pizza or Italian beef or what was a good one? Well, we'll get to the quiz in a little bit. But I don't know. See, so this is kind of subjective. For instance, there's two kinds of people in Chicago. You're either a Nuts on Clark person or you're a Garrett's popcorn person. God bless them both. But I'm a Nuts on Clark guy. Steve, do you have a strong feeling about that? Nuts on Clark versus Garrett's?
I would go Nuts on Clark for the cashews.
Oh, really? Are they particularly good?
I don't know, but I'm not a big popcorn guy.
I'm going Garrett's. Yeah. Chicago mix.
You know what? The thing that bothers me about Garrett's is the line. And the people inside any given Garrett's don't seem to care. I don't feel like I'm getting the service and thank you. Because I'm paying a lot of money for that popcorn.
Yeah, but you're getting a smell.
I bought popcorn
that stays with you.
One year for Christmas.
On your clothes.
My sister wanted to bring Garrett's to a family Christmas party. She was going with her in-laws. I says, okay. They said, you're downtown. Will you get some? I stood in line for like an hour and 20 minutes to finally get to. And I told them, I said, you're going to pay a lot for this popcorn. They said, that's okay. So I got them about, I don't know, $40 or $50 worth of popcorn, a couple of tins. And it just seemed, and it wasn't just that it was a Christmas time. The signs inside of Garrett's are kind of bizarre. Actually, they are at Nuts on Clark, too. What you can do and can't do to buy popcorn. Have you ever noticed that? Anyway, Chicago food after 11:30. Doug wanted to say something. You're on WGN Radio. Good morning, Doug. What can we do for you?
Hey, it's my birthday, and it's also Steve's birthday, so I wanted to wish him happy birthday.
I didn't know that today. Wait a second.
Oh, darn it.
I haven't been listening the whole time, so I didn't know whether it was discussed or not.
I did not know that.
Oh, happy birthday, Doug. That's one of the most unusual calls I've ever heard.
Hey, Steve, is it your birthday?
It is. It says on the refrigerator, and I forgot to wish him a happy birthday. Oh, thanks for the reminder.
Wow.
Well, I'm older than he is, I'm sure, so.
I'm not so sure of that.
You never know.
Well, happy birthday to you, Doug, and thank you for sharing your day with us and with Steve Bertrand.
No problem. I enjoy listening to you both, so have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
You too. That's a nice call, Steve.
It's very nice.
I know that you're one of those people that doesn't like to talk about your birthday.
It's not that. It's just not a big deal to me.
So let's talk about your birthday,
okay,
Steve.
Fine.
Did Sharon get you anything swell? What's on your list?
It was very
this
nice
year?
This morning. I got up, and there were little streamers in the kitchen.
Oh, aww, that's good. Anything
cute
else?
Well, I left at 6:30 in the morning, John. I don't.
So maybe when you get home, she'll have your favorite meal and
cake.
No, we're going to go out for dinner tonight.
Yeah. Okay.
Stop in at Bobby's.
Yeah. Monday birthdays are kind of. No offense, Steve. I've had quite a few.
I was feeling pretty good
I've
right till
quite,
then.
I've had a lot of them, though.
Thanks.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Steve.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, today should be a national holiday anyway, so technically you shouldn't be going to work or having to do anything, Steve, other than celebrate you today.
I'm barely working.
Wall Street Journal.
Should have taken the day off and blamed it on the Super Bowl.
This from the Wall Street Journal. Super Bowl Sunday is the second largest food holiday in the United States, second only to...
Got to go Thanksgiving, right?
Correct. Unlike Thanksgiving, Super Bowl Sunday is one of the most popular days of the year for takeout. 1 in 7 Americans order takeout on Super Bowl Sunday. Wow. Sorry about that. The National Chicken Council estimates Americans eat more than 100 million pounds of chicken wings, 1.25 billion wings. That means... what is it, 0.75 billion chickens? Good Lord, 750 million chickens. There's 300 million of us. That means that two chickens gave their lives for every American just for the wings yesterday.
Well, hopefully we got something out of the rest of them, too.
Oh, sure, we ate the other parts, but right, if I'm a chicken, wow, that's tough. 60% of the takeout orders that Americans ordered, 1 in 7 takeout, were for pizza. Pizza is the number 2 Super Bowl snack. Number 1 is wings. Pizza is one of the top 2 Super Bowl snacks. The second is chicken wings. Well, it says here, pizza is one of the top 2 Super Bowl snacks. The second is chicken wings. Well, then pizza must be number 1, huh? Over half of Americans who eat chicken wings do this with them. Want to fill in that blank? Half of the people that eat chicken wings eat them how?
Eat them how? By their hands, with their hands.
It says here.
With paper? What are you doing?
Dipped in ranch dressing.
Oh.
Dipped in ranch dressing. Is that what you were going to say, Ella?
I was going to say by pulling them apart first.
Yeah, that's what I do. I eat each little bone one at a time.
You know, that's the thing I don't like about wings is that it's so hard to get a good mouthful of meat.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to get a few of them going, Ella.
I think that is the most brilliant, probably, marketing scheme ever delivered.
What's that?
Whoever came up with, because no one wanted to eat wings, they deliver a way to make you, and now people buy and eat things that are hard to eat, they're not comfortable, and they're not very rewarding.
And
there's not much there.
Of all of the things you can eat on a chicken, this is the worst thing you can eat.
And so that's why they came up with a method to trick us into eating them.
Do you know the...
Now there's breasts going wanting.
Do you know the...
What?
Never mind. Nobody say anything. Just let that be. Do you know
how
we came to call chicken wings buffalo wings?
Came out of Buffalo, New York, right?
Correct. So estimated probability, the following story, 57%. It was late at night at a tavern in Buffalo, New York, and they were closing, and some of the guys there said, well, we're still hungry, we want to eat something, and all they had left was some wings, and so the lady said, well, I'll just throw some seasoning on them and fry them, and she fried them. You know, how is this a thing? Wings and frying have been invented forever, but for some reason that was deemed novel, And I don't know if then they dipped them in blue cheese or ranch that night, but they dipped them. They served just the buffalo wings, the wings to these people in Buffalo. This sounds ridiculous now that I'm sure the story is correct, though. But how, what, they weren't doing this in Nashville?
This sounds like a nativity story or something.
And they looked to the north, right. And there was a star in the night. And,
and the donkey was relieved.
And I'm telling you, and then they go, hey, that was pretty good. Let's do that Thursday nights and charge 10 cents a wing or whatever. And it became buffalo wings. And that's how that got started. Now that I think about that, it's not even a very good story, but I believe that is the genesis of the buffalo wing.
I'm not sure I got it. Start over.
Yeah. That was a really good story the man told on the radio. On Sunday's show, here at WGN Radio, there were two things that I thought were terrific. I mean, just think our weekend lineup is real nice. I listened to the Sinatra show on Sunday morning. I listened to Dean Richards, of course, Lou Manfredini on Saturdays. Dean Richards remembered on his Sunday show that Bob Collins, the legendary morning man here in Chicago Institution, passed away on February 8th several years ago. And he played back what Bob said on his very last show. I'll hold that till later in the week, but you can go on our website and listen to Dean's show, because I'm going to play the very same clip that Dean played on Sunday. And on Bob's last show, it was 21 things I've learned in my life. You know how we used to get Xerox copies of things, sayings or observations, the sort of things that are passed around on the internet these days. You know, when I was 2, I learned this. When I was 4, I learned that. And it was sort of the progression of a person's life and all of the wisdom they gained. And at the end, it sort of concluded that anything done with love in your heart is a thing done best. And that was Bob's message the last day he broadcast on this radio station. Then he got on his airplane and died in a crash that day. And I remember so much about all of that. I don't remember that part of the Bob story. Dean played it on Sunday, and it was just magnificent. You kind of forgot how good Bob's voice was, how particular it was, and how much he liked to read things and how good he was at them. And he did, and it was just terrific.
It was beautiful. I was there.
When he read that, Mary?
Well, yeah.
I mean, we all listened to Bob back in the day, right? I don't remember that passage that he read. It's at WGNradio.com. Click on Dean Richards' show or listen to us on Friday, and I will play it again because it really is worth playing. And then one other note, and that is on Sunday's show, Adam Hoge had a conversation with Lee Steinberg, who is Patrick Mahomes' agent. Mahomes is the quarterback the Bears don't have. And he asked him about the fact, you know, what happened? What happened? Why didn't the Bears like his guy? Everybody likes Mahomes. He's the Super Bowl MVP. What happened? And I thought Steinberg said something that we have not heard in this city. You'll hear that after 8:30. Hey, Linda, this is John. You're on the air. What can we do for you?
Well, I tell you what. I used to sit there when I was a little kid, and I'm an old lady now, but when I was a little kid, my dad would sit there with cow's tongue and slice it off and eat it. But when it came to a chicken wing, he was born and raised on a farm, he wouldn't touch them because he said that's where the lice lived.
Well, he knows that they're fried, right? That whatever's there is gone now.
Didn't matter. He would not touch them. I eat them, but he wouldn't. But he'd eat cow's tongue. Figure that out.
Hey, Linda, thanks for the call.
All right.
Happy day after the Super Bowl to you. It needs a name. Pam, you're on WGN. How are you?
Yes, I was wondering if anyone's experienced. We've gone into several restaurants from our chain, and they actually break the wing in half and call it, say, three wings broke in half. They'd say it's six wings and charge you for that.
No, you don't get to do that. You don't.
Yeah.
It's and not costing them that much. Oh, come on.
I know, and especially if you end up with more of the flat side than the meat side,
right.
It's really kind of, you know, and I don't know how they get away with it, but they tend to, and You know, it's just, they're not expensive, as we already heard, you know. So it's kind of sort of taking advantage. But I just thought I'd put that in. Thanks a lot, John.
Thanks, Pam. Have a good day. I appreciate your call. Sam Panayotovic joined us on Friday. He follows sports wagering and helps us understand some of the things going on in the real world out there. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Doing good, King. First and foremost, can we congratulate Nick Allegretti, rookie offensive lineman for the Kansas City Chiefs, Frankfurt's very own. Went to Lincoln Way East, and now he's a Super Bowl champion. Pretty cool.
Hey, congrats to him. I guess we were all following that quarterback from Arlington Heights, but it's good to recognize anybody that's from these parts, huh?
Yeah, Nick Allegretti, rookie Super Bowl champion. And how good. I texted you. I went back through our text chain because we were texting during the game, and
you were
telling me how you lost $1 million on the coin flip. You lost on the anthem, but then you got it back on the coin flip.
Yeah.
I texted you fourth quarter. It was about 20-10, and I said, it's time for Superman to be Superman. And I think he showed up at the end.
He sure did. Yeah, there was a lot of things you could bet on. I took the over on the national anthem with Demi Lovato, and she went under the prescribed amount of time. People were betting on whether or not her song would go more than 2 minutes, right?
And it was 151. So she was cruising during that anthem. I had people over at the house. We had about 10 people here, and somebody looked at me about halfway through and went, she's flying.
I noticed
that. She was going really fast, and yeah, so that went under. We also had somebody at the party that picked Jenny from the Block for the first J-Lo song. That was like 12-1, huge long shot, and that was the first song she came out with. You could bet on anything in these games, and that was sort of what we were talking about on your show on Friday. There were, at one casino in Vegas, there were 1,000 different ways to bet the game. 1,000.
I was sitting with my mom, and I was explaining this to her on Sunday. My dad and sister and I were visiting before the game started. And I was just telling her, I said, so Mom, there's this thing called prop bets. And I explained to her that. And then I said, people are going to bet on the coin toss or how long the national anthem goes. And her eyes were wide as saucers. She could not believe what I was telling her, that these are the things people bet on. Do you know how much total money was wagered on or around the Super Bowl like this, Sam?
So we won't get the official numbers until the end of the month because it is a February game. We're going to get the numbers for January pretty soon, and then you'll get the Super Bowl numbers a little bit later on down the road. But the American Gaming Association put this out late last week. A record 26 million Americans will bet an estimated $6.8 billion on the Super Bowl, legal and illegal. $6.8 billion with a B.
And were you disappointed that a lot of the things that the smart people said were going to happen? Kansas City won. Mahomes is the MVP. Nobody missed a field goal or a PAT. I guess I shouldn't be shocked, but son of a gun, they were right on all of those things.
Yeah, I got a couple things wrong as well. I really wanted that missed extra point, but how about this? I was just piecing through this morning looking at some of the nuggets here. So somebody at Circa Sports in Las Vegas bet that there will be exactly 31 points scored by Kansas City at 20-1. Final score, 31-20. So this gentleman won six figures on that bet alone. A 20-1 bet that the Chiefs will score exactly 31. 31-20 final score. But this was the really interesting one. And I know a lot of people at this point probably stopped paying attention to the game because it was already over. They had dumped the orange Gatorade on Andy Reid, which was another bet.
That's when I thought of Sam first last night. Right?
I was thinking about
it. I texted John, all caps, orange, because you said orange. And orange was, I posted it on Facebook. I'm like, all right, what color is the Gatorade? And within 5 minutes, I had every color covered by somebody. So it's a very popular prop. But Mahomes' rushing total. So the total, this is the amount of yards he'll rush for on the ground. And it opened at 28. It closed at about 35. King John, he had 44 rushing yards going into that final drive. And I don't know if you remember how it ended, but he ended up running backwards on three straight plays, and he lost 15 yards collectively. So he went under. He was over, and then he went under because he lost 15 yards on three straight. He didn't really knee down. He didn't kneel. He ran backwards and kind of slid a couple times. But if you had the over, you were a winner. And then after those three plays, you were a loser.
You know, the 31-point bet sounds ridiculous, but that's not such a crazy bet. That's four touchdowns and a field goal, high-powered offense. If I had known that, I think I would have taken – it's so easy to, in hindsight, be smart about this, right? Yeah, 31. Yeah, I would have bet that.
But yeah, 31 sounds like a good number. How about this, too? The other bet that's really popular is the first touchdown bet. And for those of us that watched the game, there were three different guys who almost scored that first touchdown, right? The running back got stopped at the one, and then they brought in the other running back, the guy who's like 5'3", the real shifty guy. He got stopped at the goal line, and then Mahomes eventually runs it in. Mahomes to score the first touchdown was 25-1.
Really?
So depending on how you played that one, you had your heart ripped out probably three or four times before he finally got. Imagine having the running back that got stopped at the one, and then Mahomes runs it in. It's just chaos. There's just chaos, and that's what makes it fun.
Of course, America wants to know how they scored the "Will we see J-Lo's rear end cleavage?" I googled that. I'm sorry to say this morning to see how that prop bet played out or paid out, but I couldn't find an answer to that.
I believe she showed cleavage, yes. I believe the yes was the winner. I mean, you watched the show, right? It was pretty much there for you to see.
All of her cleavages were shown. I thought that's the thing. I thought, this isn't even close. You see so much of her derriere that, of course, whatever your definition, we couldn't agree on what butt cleavage would be, but whatever it was, I think we saw that yesterday.
We definitely did. It was a great game, I'll tell you what. And the 21 points in the fourth quarter is the record for any team in any Super Bowl in the fourth quarter. I texted you this, too. I said, look, it's the best team against the best player. And when you give the best player a chance to do it again, he had enough life left in that fourth quarter. This is three straight games now where what I believe is the best player in football took his team from down to being up. He did it against the Texans, did it against the Titans, and they're down 20-10 in the Super Bowl, and he was just the best freaking player in the game, man. He dominated down the stretch, and we're going to see him in plenty of Super Bowls going forward, that's for sure.
I really liked, after the game, Andy Reid was talking with Patrick Mahomes to whoever was the sideline reporter there. Aaron Andrews had the losing side, but somebody on the field was talking to the two of them, and how much they complimented each other, you know, the personality-wise, but also their very words. You know, the coach was giving it to Mahomes, and Mahomes was saying, no, Reed's a great coach. And it was just so nice to see that. Maybe it's not real, but it sure looked like they had a real nice bond, those two guys.
They really do, and this was a guy that was passed up by a lot of teams. We don't really have to talk about it again and again and again, but came in with a chip on his shoulder, and man, he makes some incredible plays. I mean, that 44-yard throw, he was being like pulled down by a defensive lineman, and he sort of like submarine flung it out of his wrist, and he makes plays on the football field that I've just never seen before. And I don't care what they say or what they don't say, just to watch him and his ability, it's man, is he good.
You are too, Sam. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I guess I'll ask you to join us maybe around March Madness, if not sooner, and we'll see what the world is saying about those things. We may be betting legally in Illinois at that time.
We will be. By the way, Bears will win the Super Bowl next year, 30-1. Are you in?
Are you serious? 30-1?
Yeah, 30-1.
Put me down for 100.
No, you don't want. Don't do that. That's stupid.
Really?
Yeah, don't do it.
Put me down for 100.
Okay, you got it. Wink, wink.
Sam Panionovich. Thank you, Sam. Steve, earlier in this broadcast, I told you the warm, wonderful story of the invention of buffalo wings.
Yeah, so I'm still tingly.
And somebody said, John, I went to the place in Buffalo where buffalo wings were started, and that's the basics of the story. Not exactly, but you got it about right.
Right.
Which is really all we can hope for with me as the host.
I think that's a pretty good shot, yes.
Buffalo Wings, John, Anchor Inn was the first. It's funny that Buffalo Wings have an invention point.
Okay, but here's the other thing. They weren't deep fried for a long time, were they?
Oh, were they baked?
I think so. I thought so.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, maybe so. I would prefer them that way, now that you mention it.
Would you?
Well, Things fried aren't as healthy for you as things baked, but it's a chicken wing, so maybe we just...
It's a good thing it barely exists anyway.
Go ahead and drop it in some oil. It's time for our Mega Monday Morning Quiz. It's sponsored by Mega Pros. They make it fun to get stuff done. We need caller number 7 right now, 312-981-7200. If you get all 9 questions right about Chicago food today, after all, this is the day after the Super Bowl, you will win a Mega Pros hoodie. If you don't get all of them right, you will also win a Mega Pros hoodie. Do you think you know your Chicago food? 312-981-7200. Call me now.
Come back to Chicago.
To Chicago.
Chicago.
Drove to Chicago.
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 Shy City.
I'm coming home again.
By the way, I shouldn't get in his way. By the way, when we do this now, you can get a lifeline from one Steve Bertrand. I see that Lauren Lapka is cozying up to her traffic mic. Hi, Lauren. Will you be able to give people a hand when we do the Mega Monday Morning Chicago Quiz?
I'll certainly do my best.
Okay. This is going to not be so perfect, because the answers here are subjective. I mean, how do we say what the best, you know, wing joint is in Chicago? But we're going to go down that path, and let's do the best we can together. Ready? So it goes like this. Our contestant is going to be Rick from Skokie. Hey, Rick, you're on WGN. How are you, Rick?
I'm well, thanks, John.
Are you sure you're well, Rick?
Yeah, I'm out of bed and dressed.
What's the matter?
I'm out of bed and dressed. That's pretty good.
Really? The day after the Super Bowl, I think you're winning. That's all we need from you, Rick. Okay. So here's what we're going to do. You give me your best answer to these. If you need a hand, you can ask Steve or Lauren for an assist, okay?
Okay.
Chicago Food Planet said that this is the most famous Chicago dish of all time. We don't need to overthink it. What is the most famous food from Chicago?
Hot dog.
Hot dog is wrong. If you need an assist, you can reach out to Lauren Lapka. What do you think, Lauren?
I would say deep dish pizza, or just pizza in general.
Deep dish pizza is correct. And they said not only is it deep dish pizza, but it's from this famous location. Where would that be, Lapka?
Giordano's?
Malnati's.
Oh, Lou Malnati's, even better.
I think it's going to be like this. Here's your second question. Are you ready there, Rick and Skokie?
Yeah, I'm ready.
It's regarded as the best Italian beef in Chicago. If you get it dry, that means a touch of gravy. If they serve it wet, it's extra gravy. If you say, I want it dipped, they serve it dripping wet. What's the most famous Italian beef joint in Chicago? You want to take a shot at that, Rick?
I would say Al's.
Al's Italian Beef is correct. Some people would argue and say it's Johnny's, but I just read the description from Al's. How about this? Basic fried chicken dinner.
My favorite is Mr. Beef on Orleans.
That's the problem with these. Everybody, you know, I'm going to give you the correct answers, but if you disagree, then you're right. How about this one? The basic fried chicken dinner. If you come to Chicago and you want a basic fried chicken dinner, what's the most famous place in Chicago for that? I asked this of my son yesterday just to see if anybody would have a clue.
It's in Chicago?
Yeah. What do you think, Bertrand? You got a guess on this one?
The most basic fried chicken dinner?
Well, it's a basic fried chicken dinner. If you just want to go get a fried chicken dinner in Chicago, what's the place?
What's the White Fence Farms?
Oh, that's right, Drake's. No,
that's exactly why I asked. It's in Chicago.
Who came up with this quiz?
I did, and I don't like it. Actually, I've got here Harold's Chicken Shack.
That's a good one, famous one, yeah.
Yeah. Although, whatever happened to Drake's? Are they still in business out there?
Well, Drake's was not White Fence Farm, right? Drake's was that in Morris?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, Sharon's from out there.
Yeah. They used to advertise a lot here. They should advertise here more, and then we'd know the answer to these questions. Some say it's their Italian beef. Some say it's their burgers. But famous gourmet foodies say that the best Chicago dog is from where? It's been admired by the likes of Rick Bayless, Anthony Bourdain, Chef Grant Achatz. What's the place that they are describing here? Famous for Italian beef, and others say burgers, but the gourmet foodies say it's best for a Chicago dog. Where am I describing?
Portillo's.
Portillo's is correct.
Boy, I'm pretty good.
You're doing just, you're doing better than the rest of the people in this room.
And you're still dressed.
By the way, Superdog, you know, this is the thing. You could have said Superdog is the place for a hot dog in Chicago. To me, if you ordered one hot food from Portillo's, the great secret of that place is the hamburger. A hamburger, cheeseburger at Portillo's is as good as anything you'll get there.
The chopped salad is a winner.
That's the one I always get, Rick. I always get the chicken chop salad there, and I'm always happy with my choice. Spoon University and other websites have listed the best cinnamon roll in the city of Chicago as the one from where?
Ann Sather's.
Ann Sather's is correct.
Used to be.
Yeah, no, that's not even a competition. Ann Sather's is right. The quintessential corned beef sandwich in Chicago is from where? If you come to Chicago and you're going to get the corned beef, where do you go?
Manny's.
Manny's is correct. Number seven.
That's not a sandwich. They put half a pound of corned beef on two slices of bread.
You're right. And they call it a sandwich, but really you're just having a pile of corned beef, aren't you?
Exactly.
The best cone, you know, like an ice cream cone? The best cone in the city, all the websites agree, belongs to which place?
I don't know the name of the place. It's the Rainbow Cone on the south side.
The correct answer is the Rainbow Cone on the south side in Chicago's Beverly neighborhood. They've got one in Navy Pier, too. Which one are you for popcorn, Rick?
I'm a Garrett's guy.
Yeah, well, that's the one the websites all say. I'm a Nuts on Clark guy. Best burger in the city, and again, this is just it's subjective, but if you click around enough websites like I did all day Sunday, what's the one place that continually pops up is the best burger in the city of Chicago? Where is it from?
Billy Goat Tavern.
You know, I'm going to say that's the correct answer. They say it's Au Cheval, which is a Michelin kind of fancy burger.
But where? I've never heard of that.
Exactly. Let's just make it what you said. And finally, actually, that's it. So the best burger, according to Rick and Skokie, is where, Rick?
Well, for me, the best burger, I don't know the name of the place. It's on Western, just south of Howard.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a little shack.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know which place that is, but listen.
It's a shack. It's a yellow building. you stand in line for lunch, the double cheeseburger and fries.
I'm not a big line stander. Like, I forget the place, but it was said, like, people wait 2 hours for the hot dog or the hamburger at some place. And
it's not that long a line.
If I see five people, I go somewhere else. Rick, I've got for you a Mega Pros hoodie. I want you to talk to producer Elif off the air. We'll get your address and send one out to you, okay?
Hey, thanks, John.
Yes, sir.
I have five-word instructions for you.
Okay.
Keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work. Rick, you keep listening. You have a nice day, okay?
And thanks. You too.
What a nice guy Rick is from Skokie. Thanks for all the texts today. Some of you are reminding us, Sam Panionovich pointed out one of the guys on the Kansas City Chiefs who is a Chicago area kid, a rookie lineman, and some of you are texting in some other names and numbers. I'll just read what I got. I haven't fact-checked these, but I think you know what you're talking about. John Tomlinson, a starter on San Francisco's offensive line, graduated from Lane Tech. There's another Chicago tie to the game. 815, number 56 on Kansas City, Ben Neiman, Sycamore High School grad. Nick Allegretti went to Illinois, go Illini. And on they go. By the way, this texter said, happy birthday to my favorite radio personality. Hearing Steve always makes me smile. Signed, Brian. Thanks for that. Yesterday, I was listening to just a terrific radio show here at WGN. The guys were talking about the Super Bowl in advance of it and just kicking around their knowledge about the two teams and the players and the principals involved. And at one point, Adam Hoge played back part of an interview that he did with the famous agent Lee Steinberg. Steinberg was in our studios last year before Christmas time. We did a fundraiser for the Salvation Army. He's a big supporter of the Salvation Army. And we had a conversation with him, and we talked sports. We talked about Jerry Maguire, the agent, the movie Jerry Maguire. That agent is modeled after Lee Steinberg. That's kind of his story in a way. And I guess Adam knows him pretty well, too. So on Radio Row, when he was there covering the Super Bowl in Miami, he was talking to Steinberg. And, of course, Chicago is bittersweet about the Super Bowl because, you know, we don't have Patrick Mahomes, but we could have. So Hoge asked Steinberg about that deal and how that went down.
Going back to the draft, Patrick Mahomes, Mitchell Trubisky, it's always been my understanding that Mahomes was number two for them. What do you recall about the Bears' interest in Pat that year?
That they were interested in him. They scouted him very thoroughly. But individual teams fall in love with individual players, yeah. And that's what it takes to get drafted high. And I think you have to give Trubisky a much longer period, because what happens is the more times the quarterback sees the field, the better he gets. And there's this premature rush to judgment on them, which stultifies the development of the quarterback. So he figures to get better with every single year.
You've represented quarterbacks through different generations. Has the patience with quarterbacks gotten shorter?
Absolutely. So what happens today is they throw a young quarterback in because of social media, fan reaction, and the rest of it. He's judged to be a bust very early, and it totally retards his development. And so we have no patience, and you got to give Trubisky a chance to mature over time. The fact that Patrick's so successful, or Lamar Jackson, all the rest of it, that's abnormal.
What an interesting point, right? Whatever happens to Mitch Trubisky, we got to stop comparing him to Patrick Mahomes, because Mahomes is off the chain. He's just a different animal who's having good luck, good success, good team, right place, right time. But I mean, Mahomes is, it's not a fair comparison for anybody that early in their career. And I don't know, maybe you've heard that thought expressed before, but I don't know that I have. It was a great conversation yesterday. Adam, are you there, by the way?
I am, John. Thank you.
It was a nice conversation, just to, I think, to make that point. But I've also heard you talk about Trubisky before, and you're still on Team Trubisky, aren't you?
Well, I think that this year was sort of a reality check to some extent, but I'm not to the point where I'm giving up on him as somebody who can still win a championship with the Chicago Bears. I am with Lee Steinberg there that you do have to give these guys more and more time, and I like the word he used with Patrick Mahomes, abnormal, because nobody has won the MVP and the Super Bowl this early in their careers.
How old is he? 24?
24.
Yeah.
This is completely abnormal. We haven't seen it before. Now, it'll always sting that he was there and the Bears could have picked him. But, you know, I do agree that we need to separate these guys a little bit. And what Mitchell Trubisky needs to do to get to the level that the Bears can trust him is at least get to some level of what Patrick Mahomes does so well, which is the calmness he has when everything is breaking down in the pocket. This is the hardest thing for scouts to scout when they're looking at quarterbacks, and how it translates to the NFL is how these young quarterbacks, who are still so inexperienced, are going to handle things when they have 300-pound giant defensive linemen coming after them, and when they get tackled, it hurts. That's just a reality of life as a quarterback in the NFL, and how these guys react until they get there, you never know. And Patrick Mahomes was just as big of a question mark as Mitch Trubisky was, if not more of a question mark, when the draft happened.
Think
he's
about
bigger,
that. I mean, think
yeah.
But think about that. So, really, why didn't the Bears take him? Because they didn't know. Nobody knew. Nine other teams didn't know. So, if you knew then what you know now, of course, you would have taken
sure.
him. But it just speaks to maybe the capriciousness of the thing. You knew he was a player, but you didn't know he was going to be abnormally good. Otherwise, we would have taken him.
All you can do is scout the traits and do your homework as much as you can on these guys from a personal standpoint to make sure that, you know, they're not going to be getting arrested and things like that.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's a guessing game. It really is.
Although he did say something that I thought was also telling. Teams fall in love with a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in business, in life, in football, we all need to resist that. You go, oh, I saw something I really liked. Okay, but don't fall in love with that guy too much because it might cloud your judgment about the reality around him. He's not that good. Don't fall in love with him, you know?
Well, and I think the key is that the good general managers don't make their picks solely just on what they think in their own head. They rely on their entire staff. Now, Ryan Pace, the Bears general manager, has said from the day he picked Trubisky that it was unanimous in that room. I think we've learned since that it wasn't completely unanimous when you consider some of the input from coaches and things like that. But it does seem like from the scouting standpoint, they did have Mitch Trubisky number one, and obviously what Patrick Mahomes has done, he's taken it to another level. But I'll give you one name of a guy who figured it out a few years into his career, and that's Eli Manning. In the middle of Eli Manning's third season with the New York Giants, he was still struggling, much like Mitch Trubisky did this year, and he went on to win two Super Bowls and is probably going to go into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's funny because when I see Eli Manning's stuff, I think, is he a great quarterback or not? He will be regarded as a great quarterback?
Well, that's the thing. Mitch Trubisky's never going to be Patrick Mahomes. He could be a guy like Eli Manning, though, who is probably would not be in the Hall of Fame if not for winning two Super Bowls.
Mm-hmm.
But in those moments, he rose to the occasion and put the team on his back in big games in the playoffs. Didn't do it consistently throughout his career, but did it twice through a long career and won Super Bowls. That's ultimately, right now, is probably the best-case scenario for Mitchell Trubisky. And I realize a lot of people are probably listening to this right now and doubting that can happen. I'm not saying it will, but what I'm saying is that's probably the best-case scenario at this point.
So should the Bears plan on starting with him at the beginning of next season?
Well, I think they are planning on starting with him. I'm a little 50-50 on this because I do think they need to bring in another quarterback that can at least be a better plan B than what the Bears have had. And I'm not just talking about the fill-in for a couple games like Chase Daniel did. I'm talking about to take over the job. Because if Mitch struggles now in year four, you got to move on from him, right?
Where's Tom Brady going to be next year?
Probably in New England, I think. He just wants to hit free agency for the first time in his career, but I think he's going to be a Patriot.
Yeah. Did you think they got that call right when the Chiefs running back was about to score? He threw the ball over, or held the ball over the pylon, but his foot was kind of on the line.
Yeah, I thought that it was bang, bang, 50-50, that moment where they froze the frame
yeah.
where his foot was out of bounds. On those, look, that's not the point of instant replay. You're supposed to fix the egregious calls, so that was bang, bang either way. I didn't have a problem with them standing with the call on the field.
I completely agree with you on that, and I think that's a good way to point it. If there's an egregious error, yeah, let's fix it. But if we have to watch it 20 times and we
exactly.
still can't figure it out, and these guys got to do it in real time, I think the officiating is pretty good. That guy could sure argue his case even after having watched the replay.
Yeah, and the other first of all, I thought overall well officiated game. The only other call that was really in question was that offensive pass interference right before halftime. I thought that was a little ticky tack. I would prefer to let the wide receivers play through those moments.
Yeah.
But, you know, they called it, and if you could have challenged that, remember that you can now challenge pass interference. The 49ers could have challenged it, but I don't think it would have been overturned.
Adam Hogan and Adam John's show on Sunday was just so good. I was in the car for a lot of yesterday and really enjoyed you guys just breaking it down and chatting up the Super Bowl, and it made it more fun for me to watch. And I thought what you did with Lee Steinberg was really good.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate it. We had a lot of fun yesterday. It was a good Super Bowl Sunday in Chicago.
You going to continue to put out podcasts then, or how will people hear you?
Absolutely. If you enjoyed the show yesterday, we're still doing pods twice a week throughout the offseason. So the football never stops. You can go to WGNRadio.com and find the Hogan Johns podcast.
Talk to you later, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Sean.